Michael Grange is in D.C. as part of our coverage. The Raptors, they're up 2-0 heading into game 3 tonight against the Wizards, and Michael Grange joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Grange, thank you so much for doing this. Scott Brooks said after game 2, the Wizards head coach, sort of suggested after game 2 that he may end up going with a smaller lineup at the start tonight, making the comment. Essentially throwing, well, let's face it, he threw Marcin Gortat under the bus more than anything else. A couple of questions for you. One, do you expect to see that small lineup at the start? And two, if that's the case, does that in any way change how Dwayne Casey coaches this game?
I don't know if they're going to change the starting lineup to start. I mean, it's only because it does sort of throw your rotations off for the rest of the 40-odd minutes. And so I think, you know, if you're Scott Brooks, maybe you throw Gortat out there. And if he struggles, you more quickly go to Mike Scott. I mean, he was in there at the 4-minute mark, I think, anyway. And you know, the interesting thing was the Wizards were most effective in the second half when they played not only Mike Scott, but they went super small. Right, like they went.
Yes.
Mike Scott at center, Kelly Oubre was the power forward, Satoransky or Beal was the small forward, and Ty Lawson and John Wall were, you know, in the backcourt. So I don't think they're going to start that. But what you might see more from the beginning is a little bit more switching defensively, because that worked quite well in taking away some of the Raptors' 3-point attack in the second half. As for Casey, and we'll see. I mean, he's played everybody, so everyone's an option. But one thing the Raptors have enjoyed in the first two games is a really clear rebounding advantage. So I don't know if they want to give that up, especially off the beginning. And Jonas Valanciunas has been playing so well. I think you'd be more likely in the very early going just to try and pound him and Ibaka and ride that advantage as long as you can.
You've got an article on Sportsnet.ca, and so one of the more interesting sort of individual stories in this series, Ty Lawson, who of course was signed by the Raptors, by the Wizards after Jody Meeks was, or became a factor for the Wizards, I should say, after Jody Meeks was suspended for failing a drug test. He played pretty well in game 2 when he was inserted in the lineup. Indeed, I would say that he helped energize the Wizards, and in point of fact, I would say they were better with him and John Wall on the court than they were with Bradley Beal on the court and John Wall. This relationship between Beal and Wall intrigues me, and I know a lot of people have talked about it during the season. It's been a running story in the NBA. Is that just a situation, Michael, where you may have two players where at some point one of them's going to have to move on? Like, it just kind of smells like it, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, Jeff. And you know, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to watch how many teams take a page from the Raptors playbook, so to speak, for this past year. Because this kind of scenario, you know, wasn't all that different from what the Raptors looked at going into this year, or maybe even going into 2016 after they got swept by the Wizards. You know, there was an issue with fit, and really the players were fine. It was a matter of fine tuning your approach. And, you know, I think the Portland Trailblazers are going to be asking some of those questions too, because on paper, Bradley Beal and John Wall should be devastating. They should work wonderfully together. They have worked wonderfully together. They're outstanding players. For whatever reason, the fit between those two guys, particularly since Wall came back from injury, has not been good, and it's more glaring because of how good Bradley Beal was when Wall was out, having more touches, being more of a primary creator. But you know, the players are talented. They just don't fall out of trees, man. And you don't trade for them. You don't trade Bradley Beal and get somebody better than Bradley Beal. And I'm saying this because I don't think anyone's going to take John Wall in that contract with that knee.
Right.
But, I think there's clearly an issue. They should be way more effective than they are. But I think the solution is to figure out a solution rather than give up on it. And it'll be interesting, you know, what was interesting with Ty Lawson and what's really intriguing from my point of view, and mind you, it was one game, was Ty Lawson was great as the primary point guard playing alongside Bradley Beal and Mike Scott. Both of those guys did better with him on the floor with him at point guard.
Right.
And then in the second half, he was more like the off guard alongside John Wall and spread the floor and knocked down three threes, all assisted by Wall. So that's why I think he's a really interesting kind of lubricant in this whole relationship.
You point out as well in your article that he gives them, and actually Lawson talking about this, but he gives them a little bit of defensive flexibility. He's so quick you didn't necessarily have to avoid doubling Kyle and DeMar on the ball, you know, which, and as you point out, it's led to some open threes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, he made one comment yesterday. He just says, when we started switching everything, they didn't have an offense for it. You know, I was just at the Raptors shoot around and you know, they acknowledged that once they stopped doubling and they kind of got lured a little bit more into one-on-one play, which is okay if the matchup is good. And certainly it suited DeMar DeRozan as he went off for 37 points. But you don't want to get trapped into a steady diet of that, and it's a lot of guys standing around watching guys go one-on-one. So, you know, it'll be up to the Raptors to find balance and find those mismatches when they do switch that can be exploited, create the need for them to go and help on that switch, and then you get the ball moving and open up for threes again.
Mm.
Yeah, but, you know, Ty Lawson is, you know, he's a problem. He's two guys that fast. You know, I don't know if there's a faster backcourt in all of basketball right now than those two guys. Well, Lawson's playing with Wall. And the reality is there's no particular matchup the Raptors have that can counter it. And so I think it's really imperative on them to be able to score on the other end because, you know, they're going to be in scramble mode against those guys defensively.
You know, Matt Devlin made an interesting point yesterday, and I know, I'm crediting Matt because he was the last person to mention it to me, and I'm sure you've mentioned it as well. But you know, I've been one of those people who kind of wondered how Jonas Valanciunas would fit in to this sort of the new way of thinking for the Raptors. And Matt pointed out that, you know, when this offense functions properly, Jonas is actually getting more touches than he may have in previous incarnations of this team. You know, just because of the way the game is flowing. We've talked about Kyle, we talked about DeMar and, you know, and the bench mob and all that. Have we kind of maybe not given Jonas Valanciunas enough credit? And when I say we, I'm just in general, Mike, not you specifically, but have we not given Jonas Valanciunas enough credit for what he's done since he's come here?
Maybe, you know, I think the one thing with Valanciunas is you look at what he contributes in the minutes he plays, and it's hard to find fault with it, right? He plays about 25 minutes. He gives you just about a double-double. He's very consistent, good finisher, good free throw shooter. You know, and I think certainly as the salary cap has risen, you know, the amount, the percentage of it that he takes up has become a lot more palatable. But, you know, the point that Matt makes and that you're referring to is well taken. Like, he's evolved as a player. And if the Raptors were going to use him in an offense like they have now, which is basically, you know, they never call for a post-up anymore.
Right.
It was kind of incumbent on him to prove that he could handle the responsibility of, you know, they call them these dribble handoffs, right? So it's Valanciunas outside the arc holding the ball and either Kyle Lowry or Fred VanVleet or DeMar DeRozan kind of coming hard around, picking the ball up as a handoff like you would in a football game from a quarterback. And, you know, Valanciunas in the act of handing the ball off sets a screen. But it sounds kind of simple. It looks kind of simple, but there's a lot of subtleties in terms of how you angle that screen, what you do immediately after you set that screen, you know, make sure you hand the ball off at the right angle so that you're actually clearing space for the guy. And these are plays that Valanciunas wasn't really required on to make so much. He's improved at that. And as a result, he's been able to stay on the floor. And then when he doesn't hand off and keeps, you know, we've seen him all of a sudden square up and be a threat to shoot a three. And we've seen on a few occasions when people honor that, he'll put it on the floor and get to the rim. So, you know, these are all, were those things in his game 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
They might have been, you know, but there was absolutely no need for it. So, you know, it's a bit of chicken and egg. You know, he was given more responsibility. He's earned that responsibility since. And it's a great situation they have now because you have a selfless player. You know, he's never made a peep. Look at Hassan Whiteside in Miami, and every minute he's not on in the fourth quarter and how he can't keep his mouth shut about it. Mm. Jonas Valanciunas has never made a peep. You know, he, whatever minutes he gets, he plays hard. Teammates love him. And now he's made himself valuable that in a game like tonight, if they go small, you can at least see if you can keep him on the floor and punish other teams with his size. And that's the ultimate scenario, right, where you can – whatever adjustments another team makes, you can either stick with your program or make a counter adjustment to make them pay. And that's how you win 60 games.
I mean, the thing you have to do if you're a player in the situation Jonas found himself in was make sure you keep yourself in the forefront of your coach's mind. And he has. And that's a credit to him. And as you point out, and I think Dwayne kind of mentioned too, didn't he, in post game after game two, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he made some comment about how, Jonas has kind of learned, he mentioned the word juice, right? Like Jonas has kind of learned that he doesn't always need the juice. You know, we don't have to drop a play for him. Because we don't drop a play for him doesn't mean we don't value him, essentially, I think is what Dwayne was saying. And that it took Jonas a while to learn that. I'm paraphrasing there.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And you know, it is interesting a comment Valanciunas made before the series. And I asked him, because it's him, Kyle, and DeMar, the only guys three left from 2015. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we're more of a team now. And he kind of backtracked a little bit. Like, it wasn't like we weren't before. But the implication was everybody is getting touches. Everybody is part of the offense. It's not just three guys kind of, setting screens for Kyle and DeMar. And so if you're involved and you know you're engaged, then it's not necessarily how many shots you get or how many plays you're getting called for you. It's feeling each trip down that you're contributing to somebody else's success. And I think that's where, that's the kind of sweet spot the Raptors are in right now. And Valanciunas is right in the heart of that.